This episode of To The Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your desktop or mobile device. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter. Visit enterpriseinspace.org for more details.
Hi, I'm Monuente Reme. I played Icheb on Star Trek Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
I think it's safe to say that no one on this crew has been more obsessed with getting home than I have. But when I think about everything we've been through together, maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey. And if that journey takes a little longer, so we can do something we all believe in, I can't think of any place I'd rather be, or any people I'd rather be with.
To the journey.
You're here.
To the journey.
Hi everyone at home and welcome. This is To The Journey. I'm your co-host Kay Shaw, and with me as always are
Suzanne Williamson
and
Zachary Frueling.
Well, today we're going to have a chat about the season one episode Prime Factors, but before we do that, we've got a little extra here. We had Manu on with us for a little while to chat about his Kickstarter for the circuit, which is running at the moment. So here's Manu for you, and then we'll be back afterwards to talk about Prime Factors.
I would kill for Vindaloo right now. I want Vindaloo.
What the heck is Vindaloo?
Curry.
Ooh. Indian food. Yummy.
Are you drinking an energy drink?
You got it.
I was just saying, the only thing keeping me going right now is DayQuil and caffeine. I was like, I must have been an actor in a past life. I know most actors are going on caffeine too, so.
Bye.
Oh, bye. I love that. Bye.
I have no idea what that is, but.
It's a guava energy drink.
Okay.
With enough caffeine in here for like a cup of coffee, so it's not like a Red Bull.
That sounds so good.
Cool.
It's free.
Free is even better.
Free is my favorite price.
Awesome. How's it going?
Yeah, I was over at my buddy Ryan's house, who's helping us run the campaign, and he had like somebody gives him boxes of these things, so I stole like 6 or 8 of them.
Nice.
Cool. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, I had to kind of ramp up today. I was pretty sick earlier, and I was just like, I'm going to take DayQuil and caffeinate myself, and by the evening, I'll be okay. So here I am.
Yeah, I forced myself, too. I got a little ill these first few days of the campaign. I pushed myself too hard, and I stayed up all night, like, talking to the fans in England and Europe and Germany, and then I'm like, you've got to sleep at some point, Manu. So I took to most of the day off, but when you take the day off, then the campaign slows down, so.
Right.
Yeah.
Got to just keep pushing forward, you know?
Yeah, we are. And I went to, last night, I went to this Newport Beach Film Festival gala where all the, you know, rich money people from Newport Beach and Orange County come to bring their films and show what they've got for this year. And met a lot of cool, interesting people. And a couple of guys from LA that do the Factor magazine up here and Fan Film Factor, and they're going to do a story on it. Well worth going out there.
Cool.
I want some Vindaloo. Who's got the Vindaloo, man?
I want it really, really bad. It's just what I've been craving.
Is that chicken? No, lamb.
You can have chicken, goat, lamb, whatever you want, Vindaloo.
Goat?
Oh, yeah, goat curry is really nice.
Goat is good.
Goat is good.
Goats are so cute, though. Why would you eat a goat?
They're adorable.
And delicious.
God. I've been looking at pictures of goats lately, lots of them, because I actually have to play a goat in a movie coming up.
Manu, have you seen the goat simulator app?
Oh, goat simulator. No, I want it.
It's just so weird. I actually bought it. It's so weird.
It makes you look like a goat, or what?
Yeah, like you run around, like you like to like hop over things and kick things and break through fences, and yeah.
Oh, fantastic! Can we talk about the circus a little bit?
Yeah, are you going to have any goats in the circuit?
Absolutely, we're going to have goats in the circuit. In fact, feature, every single person has a half goat, half robot sidekick.
Wow. Robotic goat.
Yeah, everybody in Urbiesa has a half robotic goat sidekick.
Is that like a minotaur? Is it like a on a goat body with a robot head or something? Like what is that?
No, well, they're all different. They come in all different models. That's kind of the thing, is to get the cool. They're cyborg goats. You can have like a goat that's a protection goat that just, you know, you can have a goat that does your laundry, goat that does your dishes, goat that does your cooking, a goat that you can just, you know, talk to like as a shrink.
This is amazing.
And so that's basically the whole first episode is...
I need to go back and donate more money.
I know.
Me too. Me too.
Have all you guys pledged, really?
No, yeah. Not yet. I haven't decided. I've been sick. I'm there. I'm going to do it. But you got to help us out, though, because I feel like most Kickstarters have like a sweet spot. Like, you know, when the Kickstarter rewards start getting really good, but they're still affordable to the everyman. Like, where's the sweet spot for the Circuit Kickstarter?
Sweet spot is right there at the top, $10,000. Sweetest place you can be. And it's affordable to the everyman. I mean, you could sell your car, put another mortgage on your house.
We're all creative. We could find ways to get $10,000 if we needed to.
I think that sweet spot's at 1,000, right? Because you can come visit. But for folks in England, that's not, unless you fly over here. But if you're here, if you're in the States, it's a sweet spot.
I need to crowdfund my tickets at that point to get there.
Well, for our listeners who are just tuning in and just finding out about the circuit, I think people have been following it, you know, all along, but what are some of the different donation levels? What are the different rewards? What's the point at which people can really start to get involved?
Well, you don't have to donate to get involved. Unfortunately, I'd love to sell that, but you just have to write me at monumentereme@thecircuitfilm.com and tell me why you want to be involved in the series. And for each series that we fund, and you know, this Kickstarter is all about funding the pilot episode for the most amount of budget that we can possibly fund it for. We're hoping to break through the goal, do some stretch funding, and you know, we were hoping to double or triple our goal by the end of the campaign, and I think that's still very possible. And we have a screenplay
definitely
shoot for 50,000. We have a screenplay that we can shoot for 100,000. We have a screenplay that we can shoot for 150. We have a screenplay we can shoot for $250,000 as well. But the screenplay that we like the most is the 150,000 one. So, but to be a part, basically for every episode that we finance, we're going to bring in like 5 fans that are just passionate about filmmaking, want to learn, want to come in, want to intern. By the way, you'll get paid if you come too. You're going to get paid whatever we're able to pay the normal crew people. It might not be a ton of money, but it's not like you're just going to come and have to work for free. So 5 people we're going to just introduce to the film world, and they'll get to come and learn and get some skills and get some knowledge and have a good time. And then we're going to pick 5 people who are already out there in the world making films in some departments, you know, whether it be costume design or set design or building sets or digital effects or makeup artists or actors or whatnot. And you don't have to pledge to sign up, but to get what we've done is we've got a bunch of pledges where you can get your credits in the film and you can get IMDb credits, and at $25 or more, basically just go up and you'll be in the end credits. And then the further you go up, you'll be in the beginning credits, etc. But for $25, you can get your name in the credits. And I watched Adam Nimoy's film, For the Love of Spock, after I met him a couple months before it screened. And I think I told you guys last time, but we were sitting in the audience, and there were like 600 people at the premiere. And watching everybody's name go up after the program was like this moment where you felt real connection to everybody there. And I felt that was so cool, and I wanted to be a part of that. So at $25, you can at least get your name in the credits. At $35, you get a poster. At $50, you get a DVD. At $75, you get the poster, the DVD, the digital down club, the membership card, You get a digital world premiere. You get a Blu-ray with these special stickers. I think like $75, $100 is $100 is really the sweet spot, because actually it's $125 because that's basically where you get all the stuff. You get the digital download, the world premiere, the sticker set, the poster, the Blu-ray special edition, the very special thanks in the end credit. And at $115 is actually a really good gift. $115 is a great gift, and nobody's getting it. Like, 8 people have got it so far. It's the My Precious Mystery gift. And
I was afraid of the mystery.
Yeah, some people are afraid of it. Last time you'd be afraid of it. It's really freaking cool. But it says, My Precious, what is it? What's in the box? Snakes. What's in the box? Are you adventurous? Are you a big risk reward person? Go for it. Trust.
After this episode is released, there better be a bunch more people who've signed up for that.
Yeah. Yeah. And we also have only 20 special gifts at $350 that are also mystery gifts. And you also get everything else, you know, all the whole package of Blu-rays and stickers. And actually, I'll announce on the program, why not? There are 17 of 20 mystery gifts at $350 left, and I was going to make only 20 t-shirts, special official circuit t-shirts that no one else will get. And so for the first 10 people that buy that, I'm going to throw in one of those official t-shirts.
I thought you were going to say you were going to put the shirts on, walk around, get some Manu sweat on them, and send them out.
People want me to.
Manu DNA!
Whatever people want.
People are like, yes, I can clone my own Manu.
Yeah.
T-shirt yes. With Manu cooties.
Uh-huh. I'm down. If that's what the people want, I'm down to provide. I really want to make this show, man. But I want to make this pilot so good that we actually make a series and we get to sell it to Netflix and we get to go and do this over and over and over and over again and make a kick-ass sci-fi anthology that isn't so dark.
Have you had preliminary talks with Netflix, or are you not allowed to say at this point? Or?
No, we have talked to Sci-Fi, and mm-hmm. Sci-Fi is interested. I haven't talked to Netflix.
Nice.
But we're not going to go... We're not going to go pitch it until we have an example of the kind of quality of products we can make.
Sure.
We thought Kickstarter first, and then I have a producer that told me if I could raise $200,000 that he would match the funds. And for that, we can make 2 really good episodes and then bring that as a package into Amazon and Netflix and HBO and such. So that's really the ultimate goal, is to try to get there. Melissa Sandoval says she likes the mystery box things. You should get one. You know what's in it? Goat poop.
You're going to take one of those circuit t-shirts, put it on a goat, let the goat walk around for a while, get it nice and ripe, and then plunk it in the box and send it along.
If somebody buys one of those now and it doesn't have goat poop in, you're going to get some angry emails.
Where's
my goat poop?
Where's my goat poop? Give it to me. You took my goat poop, Manu. Most people, if they were getting the mystery box and they wanted the goat poop, I think they would probably assume they were getting like petrified goat poop too. Yeah. So they give me my petrified goat poop.
So what's the roadmap from here? So, okay, we've got the Kickstarter. When does the Kickstarter end?
The Kickstarter ends May 23rd. Mm-hmm. And at the end of May 23rd, we would like to click over to the stretch goal of $200,000. And then I will release video of every single actor in the circuit doing a celebration dance that we've already shot.
Wow.
They are hilarious. Priceless. I'm talking about like Walter Koenig doing the like, I just found the gold, shaking his booty dance. It's fantastic. I can't tell you how good it really is.
That sounds so amazing.
You have no idea how much I wish I had $200,000 to donate now.
I know.
Seriously, I have them all shaking their booty like they just won the lottery. Just some amazing hip-hop music. I have Walter Koenig dancing to hip-hop.
Wow.
That's the best ever.
It's fantastic. And he is grooving. Everybody is grooving.
So what happens when the Kickstarter ends? How do you go from ending the Kickstarter to now you're in production, you're ready to start filming?
Well, like I said, we have all these screenplays that we have. We have to see the budget that we hit, and then that will dictate which screenplay we're going to shoot. And then we go into pre-production, start running around looking for sets, looking for where we're going to shoot the various things, whether it's going to be in LA or not. And we will start shooting in September, so we'll probably have 2 to 3 months of pre-production where you build all the things we need to build, whether they're sets or costumes or digital environments, etc.
Goat robots.
The goat robots. Well, those are already built. I have a few in the back room.
Cool.
You're not going to bring it out and show us?
No.
No, he's got to keep the reveal.
Yeah, I mean, that's what the circuit's all about. I can't show you the whole secret goat thing.
The secret goat sauce.
I spent 2 years building these goat robots for the circuit.
So aside from goats, what are you most excited about putting into the circuit?
Can I just get really boring on you right now?
Keep it real.
I'm most excited about the stories that we're going to tell and getting to actually... Every story in the circuit, I mean, the whole idea about the circuit is I've been sort of born and bred with the Star Trek Roddenberry science fiction message, which is like, let's take science fiction and let's use it to talk about things in society, things in our culture, things in our very nature that need a deep look at. And I'm most excited to make an episode. All the episodes that we like that have been submitted and the ones that we've written ourselves all have a deeper message. And the exciting thing is to try to pull that message off without being cliche and make a good product that touches people's hearts and touches people's minds at the same time. And mostly I'm excited about getting through shooting. And shooting is pretty exciting too, because I've gotten all these people, all these actors together. If you guys don't know yet, and you're hearing about the circuit for the first time, we have Doug Jones, Gigi Edgley, Sylvester McCoy, Tim Russ, myself, Olivia Diabo, Armin Shimmerman, J.G. Hertzler, Terry Farrell, Robert Beltran, Ethan Phillips, and if you go to thecircuitfilm.com, you can see how more Ryan Eagle, the Blacklist, is going to direct an episode for us as well. It'll be great to get everybody on set and start having that time where fans and celebrities and actors and friends of mine, we sit down and we turn on the camera. That's an exciting place to be. Yeah. But after that, when that's all over, then it's all about finishing the episode and then releasing it and hoping that we affect culture and affect people the way that we set out to do. I've been sort of shocked by how, you know, we have had a lot of submissions, but they haven't been flooding in. We don't have like thousands of people that have sent in their submissions to be a part of the movie. So truthfully, I should announce that now. Like, if you want to come and be a part of this process, have a good chance of doing so. If you just send in a tape, send in a link, send in a letter. If you have experience, send in links to what you do. Whether it's, you know, whatever art that you do in film. If you don't, just send a letter or put your phone on yourself. Tell me a little bit about yourself, why you want to come, why you want to work on the circuit, and you have a pretty good chance of being selected. So more people write scripts and more people send in submissions.
Well, we won't keep you too much longer, but do you have like 30 seconds? Like, how can people help? What's the most important thing they could do right now to help with the circuit?
The most important thing you can do right now to help is, one, tell us how you can help. Tell us, you know, what skills you have, how you can bring them to the table, how you'd like to help in the circuit Urbiesa. The second most important thing to do is go and pledge, even if it's only a dollar. We have a pledge level of a dollar. A dollar to $10,000, it doesn't matter. There's fan clubs out there, and my birthday is tomorrow, and I had this dream that like this entire fan club of there's like 360,000 people in the fan club. Now, people always say this, and people always think this, but what if it actually happened? What if 360,000 people actually took the time to just sit down and donate $1? We would fund the whole dang thing. And if they would, like, if all it would take was an admin with a little bit of organizational skills to be like, hey, let's make this job happen. And if you're the fan club that does that, we will bring you, we will give you so much props. You'll come down to the set. Everybody's invited. If everybody sits down and donates a buck in a fan club that has like 15,000 people in it, we will shout you out so hard. And give you so much thanks. We'll put you on the back of our t-shirts. We'll credits. We'll do whatever we can.
Sounds like a challenge for Trek FM listeners while we're at it.
Yeah.
That really is the most important thing you can do. If it's a dollar, if you actually sit down and take the time to give $1 and share that you donated to our campaign and share our Kickstarter link on your Facebook page, on your social media, human to human around the world, that's the best way that we can spread this message and get people to know about this incredible series that we're trying to make. So if you only have a dollar to donate, take the time to do it. If you don't have a dollar to donate, take the time to share the Kickstarter link on your page and tell other people about it. It helps us way more than you could possibly even know. Part of the fun part of Kickstarter is going to the page and reading the perks and watching the videos. So everybody go to the page and enjoy it. Thank you guys for helping me promote it. And thanks for chatting to me about goats for an hour. I love you guys.
Well, I hope after listening to that, you're all poised with your fingers over the mouse button, ready to donate to the circuit. But now we're going to talk about Prime Factors. What's everybody's thoughts on this one?
Creepy. Creepy dude.
Yeah, creepy. I wrote creepy on my notes a lot.
Yeah.
I got to say, the thing that, believe it or not, the thing that stands out in my mind the most about this episode is the funny hair pieces that they wear. That's the mental image of the whatever those things. They look like spaghetti strands.
Weird spirally hair.
Hair
stuff is weird what I've
written down. Yeah. No, I like this episode because I, even though this is early in Voyager's run, and even though you get creepy dude, whatever his name is, Goth, right?
Goth. Creepy dude. That's his name. Also known as Ronald Gutman. That is the actor's name. I never would have guessed that.
Where is he from?
I'm going to Frugal that for you right now.
I really need to know because I was listening to him and I thought, he sounds like he's from the Netherlands.
He was also in The Hunt for Red October.
Yes, he was.
Oh, really?
My grandma's favorite film.
Yes.
I guess so. I hadn't thought about that.
He's from Belgium.
Belgium. I was very close. I was very close with the Netherlands. Woo.
Yes, you were close.
I actually really like this episode. Even though you get creepy dude, and even though it's early in Voyager's run, I like seeing a strange new world. And this is a strange, interesting, it's like Rise of the Delta Quadrant.
Yeah.
I like it.
A strange new world.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they were trying to do, right?
I had an Aladdin moment.
New fantastic point of view.
Point of view. No one to tell us no.
Or where to go.
I'm sorry, guys. I didn't prepare a musical number this time.
Your line is, or say we're only dreaming. Off you go.
No, seriously. I don't know if it shows my voice, but I've been under the weather for a couple days, and it has not been pleasurable at all.
Oh.
Not at all pleasure.
I was hoping Manu could donate a few of his Borg nanoprobes to kind of, you know, inject me and fix me up.
We should have asked him for that, shouldn't we? Missed opportunity.
Too busy talking about goats.
Yeah.
Apparently you can get a sweaty Manu circuit t-shirt if you ask him.
You can.
Manu DNA!
By special request. Along with your goat poop.
So is the only thing that people don't like about this episode the fact that there's creepy guy in it?
And Janeway flirts with creepy guy. Ew.
Yeah, she does a little bit. I think later on, though, it is just her trying to get stuff out of him. But
she was about to kiss him when Harry interrupted.
Yeah, that is true. I'm not so keen on that.
And she doesn't resort to that type of, you know, manipulation until we see Kashyyyk.
And this is only episode 9. She so shouldn't be kissing random dudes at this point.
No, she should still be thinking about Mark exactly. Or have moved on to Chakotay by now.
She hasn't moved on to Chakotay yet. She hasn't.
In my mind, I like to think she has.
Not quite.
Didn't you guys think that you know, even though Harry kind of struck out with the Delaney sisters at the beginning of this episode, we don't get to see that, of course. But he had some game with the girl from
he did
whatever the planet is. trying to remember the name of the planet.
That's because that poor girl didn't know any better.
Sicaris. That's the name of the planet. Sicaris.
She was just after his stories.
He's like, that's beautiful music. And she's like, oh, are you a scientist? And they had a moment.
Yeah, he totally blinded her with his science, didn't he?
Blinded her with science.
She's like, oh.
She blinded me with science.
Totes impressed with this techno babble. He did pretty well with her, and he didn't even get any alien cooties or anything.
But then he blew it, you know. She's like, oh, hang out with me in Alastair. And he's like, we have to go back now.
Yeah, well, did you see the switch? He was literally like, ooh, maybe we could get home. I'm not interested in you anymore
home
now.
Home to Libby.
Yeah. Well, it's not. It's home to mommy and daddy, isn't it? So.
I'm surprised he didn't whip out a holo photo of Libby right there and show her, like, this is my girlfriend Libby.
Yeah. And that is how you get turned down. Burn.
And what was with those creepy, like, druggy winds?
Yeah. What was that all about? That actually weirdly reminded me a little bit of, you know how in Farscape they have Zan, who's basically a plant person. She's evolved from plants. And she likes to lie in the sun and she gets all like, it all gets a bit sexy. It reminded me of that.
Sexy bits.
Yeah, it did remind me of that. Yeah, that was quite weird.
Back to Harry, though. I like the musical atmospheric sensor thing. It's like a giant space theremin.
Yeah, it was cool.
That's what I thought, too. I was like, it's like a theremin.
I half expected the Beach Boys to start singing along.
Fun, 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 fun.
I wish they all could be Sicaran girls. Do, 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 do.
I didn't know we were having a musical episode tonight, but that's how it's working.
I thought you didn't prepare anything musical, Zachary. You just busted out there.
That was just straight off the cuff, that was.
It was impromptu following Improv. Manu. This episode has some really interesting stuff in it, though. I like the idea of the black market story trading. I mean, I just think it's so interesting that this society values stories so much that they're willing to do black market trading to get new stories. Like, don't they have any writers on their planet? Can't they write their own stories?
Well, I thought that. But also, I thought the guy who got Harry to meet up with him behind the back of the bike sheds or wherever it was, he was like a drug dealer. That just amused me. He was like drug dealer. I want to be the one to supply the stories.
Hey, buddy, want to buy a novella?
Yeah, exactly. It's like story pusher. I love it. It was brilliant. I really like that bit.
Yeah, but see, Harry, he kind of oversold the Vulcan literature, right? That's not very good.
Yeah, but they are going to be impressed with the Klingon romance novels. Well, please.
They're going to be left wanting more.
I just think it's interesting. Like, there's this society that's like the most important thing to them. They're willing to like overpay and trade off their values and, you know, share their technology. Also, they can get stories.
Well, stories could represent different experiences on different worlds, things that they haven't experienced and probably never will.
Well, they're only interested in the pleasurable stories, apparently.
Yes, because it's all about pleasure.
They're not going to want the dark stuff.
Would you like some pleasure?
I actually wrote that down. It's all about the pleasure.
Zach, that was perfect. You're doing the guy for the rest of the episode now. That's you.
Oh, sure. You're a creepy dude.
Yeah, anytime you need a line quoted from this guy, just let me know. I'll do my best.
Okay.
Give me another one.
Say pleasure every now and then.
Pleasure? Pecan pie?
Oh, wait a minute. That had me thinking about pecan pie.
Oh, yeah. When Harry met Sally.
When Harry met Sally.
Yes.
Would you like to have some pecan pie?
What if Billy Crystal had played this guy? He's like, can I interest you in my pecan pie? Pecan pie.
He loved that pie. He really loved that pie.
Well, who doesn't love a good pecan pie?
That is true. That is true. I loved it when she was like, oh, I need you to let us like use your technology to go home. And he was like, oh, I must talk to the other magistrates about it. But, you know, obviously once I'm done eating my delicious pie, not right now.
Would you like to partake of my paprikash?
For the rest of the podcast, we will talk like these.
Like these. Like these. Like these.
Like these.
Now I need to watch When Harry Met Sally.
Yeah, it must be on Netflix.
I was thinking of both Carrie Fisher and, oh my gosh, that actor that she's paired up with in the movie, they're both gone.
Oh, yeah, they're both dead, yeah. In all fairness, that was almost 30 years ago.
They're paired up in the next emanation.
Yes, with Lady Gaga.
They're just at a Lady Gaga concert, yeah. The thing that I really want to talk about this episode is, yet again, we've got this idea of really rubbish 24th century fashion. What is with the
outfit?
That's
what you want to talk about at this episode.
Yes.
They're pajamas.
They are pajamas. And they're also just hideous colors, as per usual. So I think we just need to have a general rant about costumes in Star Trek.
I love it, because, I mean, I'm a child of the 80s, but I was a teenager in the 90s, and this screams 1990s to me. It's like, you know, where's the fanny pack and the, you know, waist-high pants and shoulder pads and bright colors?
I just think that all of the costumes in Star Trek, of which this is a very good example, look like they've been made from the offcuts from all the other costume departments.
All the little bits that were left on the floor.
They just, like, the arm is one color, and then there's like a red bit down here and like a gold bit over there, and then like completely different materials just mashed together.
Yeah, but I think it's really hard. I mean, put yourself in the costume designer's position. It's really hard to come up with a way of making an outfit that looks familiar. It's cloth, but it's also alien, or it's also futuristic, but it's not just, you know, futuristic version of human clothes. That's not easy to do.
Yeah, but when Janeway and also Harry get in the native clothing, they both look awesome, and their clothing is both really mm-hmm. cool. I really like Janeway's dress thing with the little shirt underneath it. That was very
that
cool.
Is very pretty.
Yeah, it's and she did her hair different as well. Did you notice?
Yes.
It's been a while since we've had a good rendition of To the Journey fashion show, so
that is true.
This is great. Yeah. I'm glad we're talking about this.
We got two Janeway hairstyles in this episode. We began with the bun of steel, and then we went to like the nice little roll at the back with the little wispy bits,
the twist.
Never mind all the really important stuff in this episode, like, you know, the reverse prime directive kind
we're
of
gonna
issues,
get to that. We're gonna
We want to talk about the fashion.
Well, we do, yeah.
Now, do you think Seska was really talking about meeting up with her brother, or was that just another lie?
I wrote exactly that down. I said, is this her real brother? Is this an imaginary brother? Is it a made-up brother? I don't know.
Is it a holographic brother?
I'm glad you're talking about this, because one of the things I love at the very beginning of the episode was when B'Elanna and Seska are kind of girl gossiping around the table, and the dude walks by and B'Elanna's checking out the dude, and Seska calls her out on it. I love it.
Girl talk.
Yeah, it's just funny. You don't see that very much.
And
so
let's just not forget to mention the fact that Harry fell out of the gondola, because that's hilarious.
I say the Delaney sister pushed him.
I think they did, but as soon as they talk about that, I just get this vision. You know, like in Encounter at Farpoint when Wesley falls in the water on the holodeck and he comes out the holodeck all wet. I got the same thing with Harry. Harry coming out the holodeck all wet. So that'd be hilarious. With all his hair like plastered down
nice
the sides of his face. It would have been
it's like,
funny.
Sorry, Lieutenant, I'll get a towel.
You're dripping all over the corridor.
Yeah, and then we get this lovely little bit where Janeway's like watching them having the conversation. She's like, oh, all my little lambs are getting along. I'm so happy.
The crews are merging, Tuvok. Isn't it lovely?
Yeah, and then Tuvok says it in a Tuvok way.
That's only Tuvok can.
It will increase performance and maximize
that
efficiency.
That was it.
So even Tuvok approves in his way.
He does. Because it's only logical. And really, Tuvok's logic is at the root of this episode.
But I love when Janeway throws it back at him, like, oh, relaxation on this cool pleasure vacation planet? Sounds like that would increase performance and maximize efficiency,
yeah,
hey, Lieutenant?
Yeah, I love how she, like, throws his own words back at him later on. That was great.
Speaking of that scene, did you notice how much starfruit was in the galley?
A lot.
Like, bowls of starfruit everywhere. I'm like, that stuff's expensive. I want some. Sorry, I'm a little food obsessed on just watching this episode. I was like, ooh, pecan pie, starfruit. What is she eating there? Dried apricot? I don't know.
You need a replicator, because obviously it's not expensive to replicate.
I guess not.
It must be very cheap to replicate. Or that's what Tom Paris has been spending all his replicator rations on.
Starfruit.
Obsession just a bowl with of starfruit, please.
Yeah.
You picture Tom Paris walking up with a replicator. One bowl of starfruit, please. Oh, you. 20 different varieties of starfruit. They can't even get that right.
I think starfruit's starfruit at the end of the day. Don't think he's got too many worries there.
I do really like the banter between Janeway and Tuvok at the beginning, and then I like the way it's bookended by their kind of argument and tension, and the fact that Tuvok disappointed Janeway at the end of the episode. It's a nice little arc inside the episode.
The bit at the beginning when we see that relationship and that confidant type of thing, which we lose later once she starts having that with Chakotay. I wished we'd seen more of that, because even though she does tend to go to Chakotay for that type of conversation in the future, it's a different dynamic.
She really sold it. She's like, I depend on you, Tuvok.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That sounded very much like Janeway.
And maybe that's why she turned
to Chakotay.
Was
that a good Janeway impersonation?
Yeah, you're winning on the voices tonight.
Okay.
It's all the Dayquil.
It's Dayquil and caffeine. That, for you at home, that's the only thing getting me through tonight's episode. I am on Dayquil and caffeine. So there you go. I've got the post-holiday get-together cred.
Get another guava-flavored energy drink.
Every time we have a family get-together, one of my relatives brings sick kids and I end up getting sick. So.
Yeah, it's that argument at the end between the two of them. Argument. I don't know whether you can call it an argument because Tuvok doesn't yell back. That disagreement of opinion between the two of them at the end there is pretty awesome.
But this is a great example of Tuvok's weird Vulcan logic, because you can justify anything this way. He's like, oh, you're too worried about breaking the rule, so I broke the rule for you and I can get away with it because that's logical. So you know, anyone who wants to break a rule, just have Tuvok do it for you.
But he knew she wanted to break the rule.
Yeah. And it wasn't just that she wanted to do it. It was the fact that she'd stated previously that her primary objective was getting the crew home.
But what if I said something like, hey, Tuvok, my primary objective is to get some more replicator rations. I'm thinking about stealing Tom Paris's replicator rations, but I'm having this great moral and ethical dilemma. And then Tuvok would go, wow, I really care about my friend Zach. And so I'm going to save him the trouble of worrying about this ethical dilemma of stealing Tom Paris's replicator rations. So I'm going to steal the replicator rations for him and give them to Zach.
But there was no stealing involved.
But he was violating the prime directive.
But not by stealing.
And that's general order number one. That's worse.
Thank you, Harry Kim.
It's
general order number one.
Thanks, Harry Kim, for pointing that out. Ensign Kim.
I like that. And when he said that, I kind of had a moment of, oh, is this the first time we've mentioned the prime directive? Like, I know they kind of mention it in Caretaker, but I think this is the first. We're just reminding everybody what it is in case you've forgotten.
After that many seasons of Star Trek on the air.
In case you forgot, the Prime Directive is...
And I do like that they're on the other side of the Prime Directive.
That was very cool.
It finally bites them in the butt.
I don't know whether we see a lot of examples of that in Star Trek. And it's very cool because usually when we see it presented the other way, like some other alien wants technology from us...
Like the Kazon.
Yeah, it's presented as they're the big bad wolf. And so this way it was really interesting because we can see, actually, no, we're not the big bad wolf, but we can still understand why they don't want to give it to us because we know how we'd feel in that same position.
Well, one thing that doesn't really make sense to me, like, so these Sakaarans, they're so focused on pleasure, and yet they have these really strict rules. Like, wouldn't it be pleasurable to, you know, help them get home? And why, you know, why, what's the relationship between the pleasure part of their ethics and the rules part of their ethics?
Yeah, I mean, it's tricky, isn't it? Because I think they're very immediate.
Yeah, and if they're so immediate, why do they have such rigid rules? Like in the moment, wouldn't it be pleasurable? So why do they care about the rules?
Yeah, I guess, because you think, oh, well, they're not really about balancing, oh, well, yes, that would be pleasurable now versus potential lots of other pleasure at some point later. Because, yeah, they really are very immediate about it.
But they only do things that will give them pleasure. Sending Voyager home wouldn't give the Sakaarans any pleasure.
Yeah, that's true. Gath really wanted Janeway and company to stick around, largely for selfish reasons. But it's not pleasurable to send them off home, right? They want to keep them there to keep lavishing them.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what you're saying is, wouldn't they get enjoyment out of the fact that they'd helped us? Or they'd helped our crew. But I don't think they work like that.
They don't.
Because they're too selfish to get pleasure out of that, I think.
At the beginning of the episode, you think they work that way because they're all into hospitality and helping. And,
yeah, but they don't.
You know, listen to our space theremin and you know, eat our pecan pie kind of
touch
thing.
Touch,
you know,
this right. Really creepy fabric.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like Mithrail.
Now, talking about that fabric scene, That scene really reminded me of the scene from encounter at Farpoint with Beverly Crusher when she's getting the material.
And
the thing makes like the gold. And I thought, oh, this is really interesting, because it's like at the same time they're going, oh, well, we want to tend to your every need. And then in Encounter at Farpoint, it's the same. And the parallels there just like leapt out at me.
I can kind of picture Janeway going, that would look great with some gold trim.
Yeah. And then suddenly it appears. And then all the audience goes, oh, no, it's happening again.
Not again.
Where are the giant jellyfish? Where are they?
Yeah, and then Tuvok goes, I recall this happening in some logs I read about the...
I do find it really interesting that Captain Janeway was really hesitant to take the, you know, somewhat generous offer of an entire wardrobe or a dress or something more lavish than just a mere scarf. She kind of downplays it. And the guys, you know, we don't know that they're bad people at this point, right? This is early in the episode. And he's laying it on thick. He's like, you know, have an entire wardrobe. You know, it would give us pleasure to give it to you. And she's still like, oh, no, I can't do that. I just think it's interesting.
It is interesting. It's a completely different way of looking at it, because I think it's very natural. I'm going to say because we're a very transactional species again. But.
Well, there's kind of a song and dance. I mean, I can imagine something like this, like, oh, no, I can't take the nice dress. And then he'll go, oh, but I insist. And there's kind of this back and forth politeness song and dance to that kind of thing.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, if he insists, like, take the wardrobe, you know, why wouldn't Captain Janeway go, okay, I'll take the wardrobe.
Yeah. And we're even worse than that in the UK.
Where's she going to put it?
In her space closet? I don't know.
Space closet. What kind of question?
I'm sure her closet is like, you know, not even a foot wide.
I'm sure she could wear it to Fairhaven or to Janeway Air or somewhere.
Sandrine.
Couldn't she just scan it into the replicator and then she can get it out whenever she wants?
That would be good.
Because then she could get the patterns for the material into the replicator, mm-hmm. like the weave of the material into the replicator.
But maybe you can't replicate it. Maybe it's like gold press platinum.
Unacceptable.
If that was the case, wouldn't we be using it as currency? Because doesn't everything you can't replicate end up as currency?
So this bowl of star fruit is going to cost you a scarf.
So they trade in stories and scarves, is what you're saying.
Maybe the reason that there's so much star fruit in the canteen is because the Talaxians use star fruit as currency. That's like Neelix's life savings right there.
Let's see, that'll be...
People are going to eat it.
That'll be 2 star fruits and 50 Leola roots.
Did you actually see anybody eat one?
No, but I would have.
Yeah, but Neelix is going round slapping everybody's hands when they try to eat it. Oi! That's my currency.
Well, then he should just store it in his quarters and not in the galley.
He hasn't got room in his quarters.
It's full of star fruit.
I love the way Neelix in this episode says, Captain, I'm making dinner in 2 hours.
I know.
She's like, yeah, that's why I want to eat this tasty food now.
That's why I'm going to eat some nice
food. So I'm not hungry.
Fill up on that, and then I don't have to eat your Leola root, whatever the heck it is you're making today.
Your goulash.
Leola root goulash.
You don't want to spoil your dinner, Captain.
That sounds horrible.
Even though this isn't like one of the best episodes of Voyager, I really like kind of the fantasy and science fiction elements of it. I like this idea of the spatial trajectory. I just think it's cool. You could hop 40,000 light years away. It would solve Voyager's problems. You get to see a strange new world. I think it's interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. I don't know how I feel about it being this early.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's yet another like, oh, Voyager almost found a way home, but they're thwarted again, just like the micro wormhole in the other episode.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun.
I don't know whether it might have had a bit more impact if it had been done a bit later.
And I guess I don't understand, why can't they just build one? Like, okay, the spatial trajector works for the Zakarans. Won't it work for Voyager 2? Yes, their technology's not compatible, but why can't they just build their own? I don't understand.
I don't know. Maybe it has stuff in that they just can't get. We don't really hear that, do we, why they can't do that?
Yeah.
I'm guessing there was some reason why they couldn't build it. Maybe they didn't have the right materials.
The gel packs were protesting.
Yeah.
Anti-neutrinos and things.
Yes.
You know what the anti-neutrinos do to our jelly.
What was the phrase in this one? It was a neutrino envelope. Is that what it was? Or was a...
Something like that.
I just remember they didn't take the anti-neutrinos into consideration.
They didn't. And all I've written down is, in capital letters with lots of exclamation marks, unstable plasma manifold, destroy the widget.
Fire that phaser!
Destroy the widget!
You know what would have got the job done in this episode, though? If Chakotay had said, there's a story about this young Native American boy, this young warrior who was...
It has to start, there is an ancient legend.
There was an ancient legend, right? Until he met Gath of Sakaris. Gath, Mr. Pleasure Laban.
Thankfully, Chakotay never met him.
He was restless until he came to Sakaris, and Gath asked him, "Would you like some pleasure?"
Ew.
He's not the Swedish chef.
Work.
Hurdy-gurdy.
Would you like some pickled herring? Bork. You know, this dude, he does kind of sound like the Swedish chef, doesn't he?
He does a bit, yeah.
I think I would have rather have seen Janeway almost kissing the Swedish chef than this.
That would have at least been entertaining.
That would have been awesome.
Actually, you know, Neelix actually kind of looks like the Swedish chef in that hat that he wears.
Yeah, but is it a hat or is it a shower cap? Because I couldn't quite figure that out.
It's both.
Wow.
Dual purpose.
He showers in it. Actually, he has to shower in it after cooking with the Ola root because there's so much oversplash.
Yeah, if you go to IKEA, the shower caps actually are labeled Bork.
Bork.
Yeah. Now I want the meatballs.
Yeah.
Now I'm craving meatballs. Thank you, Zachary. Appreciate that.
You're like starfruit meatballs.
I can't help it. It's this baby. It's like, feed me.
For the listeners at home who can't see Suzanne, Suzanne currently looks like a jackpot machine, and she's just got pictures of like meatballs and Leola root and all kinds of things going around in her eyes.
Pecan pie.
No, I know I said before that my favourite bit about this episode, or the bit I wanted to talk about the most, was the costumes. But actually, my favourite bit of this episode is the fact that Tuvok just surprises everyone. I love all the astonished looks.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's too much.
Seska's face.
I just don't think it's believable. Do you think it's believable? I just don't buy it.
Oh, yeah.
I buy it. I do buy it, actually.
Well, he wants to go home, too.
He does. But I think the logic does make sense. As Janeway says, you know, he can mm-hmm. use his logic to justify pretty much anything. But I feel like at this point, they were trying to feel out the Tuvok and Janeway relationship. And I feel like this was a really good marker for that. I really like the way that they do that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I also really like the fact that we get this Vulcan that doesn't act the way that you might expect a Vulcan to act. And I wish that we'd seen him do more of that type of thing, where he's like, well, it's only logical, but actually logic isn't necessarily what we'd think it is. It feels like a missed opportunity that we didn't see him doing this kind of thing more often.
I think you're right. Even though they kind of dropped the Janeway Tuvok mentorship role in later seasons, I think it's there in the background. I think everyone remembers that they have this kind of relationship, even if they don't draw a lot of attention to it.
Yeah.
Well, that friendship is always there.
Yeah. I just think it would have been nice to see, as the seasons went on, not all the time him just doing random stuff and justifying it with logic, but every now and then him doing something like that, you know, and it being long enough between each time that, again, it would be really surprising when he did it.
Yeah.
I'd really have liked to have seen that. Like one a season or something.
Do you have like another example? Like what else could you see Tuvok doing? Like, can you apply this to another episode?
Well, I mean, we've seen in other episodes where Chakotay's gone against Janeway and kind of gone and done something else. So we could have
Scorpion.
Yeah, I was just thinking about Scorpion actually. So we could have seen something like that with Tuvok as well.
So remove Chakotay from that role and insert Tuvok.
Yeah, that could have worked really well, actually.
Yeah.
And it also would have meant that they didn't fall out, which would have been good.
Yeah.
But of course, we needed here we go, ancient legend about scorpions again.
Well, Chakotay still could have, you know, given that little parable.
Yeah.
And Tuvok would have meshed that into his logic and made it work.
I think it's also just really sweet that Tuvok cares enough about Janeway's dilemma that he wants to remove her burden and kind of take the burden on himself.
I'm sorry, the whole burden thing brought me to the ancient legend, and I'm like,
what?
Oh,
you're back
to that.
You're making her burden lighter.
Yeah, well, you know, that is what it's all about. At the end of the day, take away that burden and replace it with some good old pleasure.
Because it's all about the pleasure.
It is all about the pleasure. And the hairdos.
I think the discussion between Janeway and Gath about the nature of pleasure is interesting. You know, she rightly observes that he's interested in momentary, immediate pleasures, but humans are more concerned about long-term pleasures and longer-term relationships, longer-term satisfaction.
Yes.
And you just can't understand, you know, if you were here with us, you'd stop thinking those crazy human thoughts.
Yeah, I really like the bit where he says, you know, you should stay here and you'll soon forget about that. And she's like, well, that's why I have to leave. I really like
it. Yeah, it's brilliantly done.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of contrasts in this episode. There's a lot of seeing things from two different sides and seeing things from a different side to how we'd normally see them presented.
The Zakarans are like pigs rolling in the mud. They're happy as can be in the moment, but they're missing some of the deeper pleasures in life.
You could probably talk now about hedonism or something else equally Metatrek-y, but...
Yeah, I was actually just kind of like, you know, starting to think of Metatrek's episode, but, you know.
Maybe you need to put a pin in that one and take it over to...
Yep, exactly.
Some point. One thing that I did want to ask you guys about what you thought about this episode was, like, B'Elanna. Because we see B'Elanna really have grown in this short period of time. And she's got to the point now where, like, her duty to the ship and her desire not to disappoint Janeway seems to be becoming more important to her than her previous principles.
Oh, yeah.
How do you guys feel about that in terms of how early on it is? I think for me, I like it and I like to see it, but it feels a little bit too early, I think, for me.
But I feel like she's got to grow up quick. She's chief engineer of a starship. And I love that Seska's like, mm-hmm. I don't understand you anymore. You're not yourself anymore. And she's like, no, I'm not. I'm chief engineer of a starship now. I've got to grow up.
Well, technically, neither is Seska.
Yeah.
Seska's not Seska.
Well, yeah. And I mean, I found it quite surprising that it's almost Carrie is the one who persuades her. Actually, no, we should do this. Naughty, naughty Carrie, get in the corner.
Well, he just wants to go home because he doesn't want his boys to grow up without a father. Which, unfortunately, they do.
Yeah.
Thank you, Admiral Janeway, for not coming back.
You were 2 weeks too late.
An episode earlier.
The part I don't find very believable is the part at the end where B'Elanna says, we're going to come clean. We're going to tell everyone that we're involved. And everyone else is like, are you nuts? Why would you do that?
I guess in some ways I do understand what you're saying. Because I think, like we see after Parallax, you know, she's almost surprised that people are prepared to have faith in her. And it's almost like the fact that somebody's prepared to do that and the fact that somebody's prepared to give her that level of trust, she almost feels more of a sense of needing to act up to it because she's so surprised that that's been given to her in the first place that she's just like, I can't screw this up.
But I think Carrie and Seska would be correct in saying, are you nuts? Are you trying to get demoted? You're going to lose your commission.
Yeah, and I mean, when Janeway tells her how disappointed with her she is,
she almost sheds a tear.
Yeah, almost on the verge of tears.
I'm sorry. Klingons have no tear ducts. I forgot.
Totally deflated. Well, she's half human, so maybe she does. I don't know.
So she can squeeze out a tear or two, but it's a lot of work.
So she really was nearly crying, so that was obviously very emotional for her. I found it quite interesting that she says to B'Elanna, oh, well, I can't stick you in the brig for the rest of the journey because... I need you. I need everyone on this ship. My brain instantly went, except Lon Suda. Don't need him.
Yeah.
And Seska.
Yeah, and Seska.
Don't need Seska.
Yeah. And Michael Jonas, we could do without him as well.
I actually do think there's something to this. I mean, Janeway was supposed to be such a strong female character, and she generally is a strong female captain. But, you know, it kind of undercuts that concept to have her walk around going, I need you, I need you, I need you, I need you in this episode. She needs Tuvok, she needs B'Elanna, she needs everyone in this episode.
Except for Goth.
Be the captain. You don't need B'Elanna, someone else can be engineer.
She doesn't need the pleasure.
But being strong doesn't mean you don't need people. You can still be a strong leader and a strong character and still need people there to support you.
And admitting that you need them is also a strength.
Oh, yeah. No, I totally understand. I think that this could add to the perception that she's just a little whiny. Like, Tuvok, I need you. B'Elanna, I need you. No?
Do you notice how when Goth kept touching her, like the constant touching, and she was kind of creeped out about that, I was like, ah, it's payback because you're always touching people.
Yeah.
This is how they feel sometimes.
Yeah, but weirdly, it's not creepy when she does it.
No, it's not. But still, it's just like, not everybody's touchy-feely.
Yeah.
She's like, can I touch your palm fronds on your hair?
That is not at all pleasurable.
I do get what you're saying. I think her reaction to B'Elanna is more what you'd expect. With Tuvok, I think it's because of the specific nature of that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
A situation like that, honestly, I think calls for a little more anger and a little less vulnerability. They were people who just disobeying your orders and not breaking the rules. And she gives them a talking to, but it's a pretty soft talking to.
I don't know. She's harsh with B'Elanna. But then with Tuvok, I think it's just because she is so surprised that he's done it. She's so shocked that he's done it. She doesn't. It's almost like she's not processing it. That's what that's about, I think. And she doesn't shout at him because she can't
What's
even process that he's done it in the first place. And, you know, as you were about to say, there's very little point in yelling at a Vulcan.
Yeah, it doesn't do any good, right?
No. In future, you bring your logic to me.
I mean, I do like that it shows the emotional depth of Captain Janeway and the relationships that she has with her crew. I mean, I appreciate that.
Well, and also because of the fact that she's in this unique situation where she doesn't have people above her to go to, she has to have that in her crew more, I think, than we see in other captains in Star Trek. Because other captains in Star Trek, they can treat all their subordinates like subordinates, but she can't do that with everybody forever because she's never got anybody to go to then.
Yeah.
And, she, you know, even the strongest person can't do that for 7 years. Obviously, she doesn't know it's going to be 7 years at this point, but...
It might be 70.
It could be.
It's also an instance of the Voyager reset button, though, because, you know, Tuvok broke the rules, and Carrie broke the rules, and B'Elanna broke the rules, and Seska broke the rules, and at the end of the day, no consequences. On to the next episode.
Yeah, I think we've talked a little bit in the past about episodes that end abruptly, where not even necessarily the fact that you don't see any follow-up in the next or following episodes, but the fact that you feel like there would be emotional fallout after that. We see her at the end sort of looking out the window and she's got her head in her hands, and I want to see what happens next after that.
Yeah, like one more episode where she's still pissed off at Tuvok would have been great.
Yeah, just giving him the cold shoulder.
Because, you know, how does she handle that? What's the atmosphere like when she walks out on the bridge? How does that dynamic work? Mm-hmm. Is she going to be all business professional, sit down in the chair and just pretend it never happened, which I can see her doing, but then quietly there's tension? Or is there going to be like real cold shoulder stuff or what? How does that work? And then do they eventually have some kind of resolution conversation? I feel like we're missing all of that.
There's a little bit of that with Seska when Seska's like, you know, our captain's too busy cavorting with that, you know, Sakaran guy. They're kind of bitching about the captain.
Yeah. I want to see more of the emotional fallout.
So, seriously though, you guys, this is not one of your favorite episodes?
I wouldn't say it was one of my favorites, but I do like it.
I wouldn't put it in my top 10, but I might put it in my top 20. I quite like this episode. I always have.
I just like bits and pieces. So if I could take some from column A, some from column B, and leave out all of the creepy dude, it'd be okay.
It's quite a deep episode. Once you start delving into it.
I want to ask this, though. Do you think he's creepy from the very beginning in the episode, or is he only creepy when she...
Yes! From as soon as he opens his
he's
mouth.
He's kind of a smooth talker. Like, he's got the Swedish bork, bork, bork thing going on. He's, you know...
It's just this vibe that I get off of it.
What do you have against Swedes?
I have nothing against Swedes, because he's Belgian.
Oh.
And he is Belgian, so all good. I would say yes... He is creepy from the beginning, but he gets creepier as the episode.
He does get super creepy.
Not from the beginning, though. He's kind of an amicable character at the beginning. No,
because it's kind of creepy that he has a distress signal because they're the ones that are in distress. I'm like, whoa, dude.
That's
what?
So weird. I'm glad you thought
that. gave me the heebie-jeebies.
I'm totally with you guys on this. That is so weird. And he says, you know, I did a distress call because you're the ones in distress. And then she's like, oh, let me beam down to your planet then.
It's like, no, Catherine, sense. Hello. That's the worst child line ever.
Catherine!
Someone in the writer's room could have said, no, that doesn't make sense.
It does sound like a really bad chat-up line, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Why are you sending out a distress call? Because you're not in distress. No, you are.
I mean, it at least calls for a little more explanation or exposition, like, oh, you guys are stuck out here by yourselves. We thought you might like to enjoy our hospitality, our nice planet. And you know, they don't really do that. It's just weird. It's a weird scene.
Yeah.
I don't really find any of the rest of them creepy. I mean, we only see a couple of other people, don't we, that actually have speaking parts.
Well, the literature pusher is kind of creepy, too.
A little bit, but not quite in the same way.
Not as creepy.
The scientist girl with the weather machine, the space theremin, she's reminded me of someone from Ryza, like just kind of innocent and, oh, would you like your Jamaharan?
Yeah,
you
know. She was nice enough.
When they were on the planet with the drugged up winds, she got a little creepy.
She did a bit, yeah. She did technically kidnap Harry and take him 40,000 light years away, so I suppose that was a bit weird. Yeah, I revised my opinion. They're all creepy. The whole planet is just full of creepy people.
No. She just wanted to hear his stories. What are you talking about? What's creepy about that?
Tell me your stories. She should have taken Chakotay. He's got loads of stories.
Yeah, I'm going to get you drugged up. He does. He has the best stories.
He could just make him up stories forever.
I'd listen.
In fact, they could have just told them the Angry Warrior story and then just left. That would have done them forever, wouldn't it, really?
But they don't know it yet.
No, that's
what
true.
If it had been Tom Paris there instead of Harry? Do you think he would have started telling Captain Proton stories?
Maybe. He would have started writing them holo programs.
I don't think he would have started with stories. I think he just would have, you know, like... smooched her.
Tom was very worried about his like probation report because he didn't want to get involved, did he? He really didn't want to get involved in the conspiracy, as I've referred to it in my notes.
The conspiracy.
Yes. Well, it was a bit of a conspiracy.
It was.
I do like that early in Voyager's first season, we still get Maquis Starfleet tension, of course. I mean, at this point in Voyager's journey, a good portion of the crew are still, they just don't like the fact that Captain Janeway is making all the decisions.
But she's the captain.
I was going to say, that is how captains work.
Yeah, but Seska's like, we need to take this matter into our own hands. Mm. And she manages to convince a couple of Starfleet to go along with her.
Well, that's because she's a stinky Cardassian.
Yeah.
But it's just as plausible if she weren't, right?
Yeah. Do you think they decided that at this point or not?
I honestly don't know.
I don't either.
I'm losing my Voyager street cred, I know. I don't.
After watching this episode again for the first time in a while, I actually lean towards they hadn't decided to do that.
She plays it pretty innocently.
She does.
She's just frustrated, but she's not evil.
Just feel like if that had been decided from the beginning, they would have dropped a little hint in there, even if it was only one little bit and there was nothing, because I was really watching for it. And she really did play it straight down the line, so I don't think they decided to do that yet. I think they decided to do that later. Well, it's been fun talking about Prime Factors this week, but that's not the only thing we've been talking about here on Trek FM. So here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, the 602 Club.
We really devote so little time to our title character. I was really struck by that in this rewatch. I haven't seen this movie since it first came out in theaters. But I was struck by just how little time it feels like Thor's on the screen and how little they delve into his motivation.
Melodic Treks.
I said, this is Leisure Suit music. This is what somebody thinks is hip music in 1971. You know, when I listened to it again, when you sent me the link to the audio, my thought immediately went to two films, which it turns out he scored, Our Man Flint and In Like Flint.
Literary Treks.
I'm glad we reread this, because at the time I did read this, it was when the new movie was out. But now that we've had the three movies, as you just mentioned, and I've seen Star Trek 09 about 100 times, I'm very familiar with the movie and not as much as with the comic now, because I've only read it maybe a couple of times.
To the journey!
I've just got this vision now of Janeway there. Who's a good Voyager? That's a good girl.
Well, she liked to, you know, stroke the halls and everything.
So Tom Paris would be like, who's a good girl? You want to go for a ride? Let's go.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button. That helps us out greatly and makes it easier for other listeners to find the show as they search iTunes. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, and now also on Google Play and YouTube. And of course, you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website and grab the RSS link as well.
Another way you can help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week is to become a patron of the network through Patreon. If you visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you'll find our current goals and different milestone contribution levels, along with all the great perks we have for you. These perks include early access to content, exclusive content, producer credits, seats in our content development team, and many more. We really appreciate any support you can give us, and we hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
We have a few people we would like to thank. Firstly, the founder and publisher of Trek FM, C. Brian Jones. Our executive producers, Matthew Rushing and Kenneth Tripp. Aaron Harvey, our art director. Richard Marquez, our production manager. And Brandon Shematella, our Patreon manager. We'd also like to thank our associate producers, Bruce Lish, Ju Kim, and Richard Marquez.
And don't forget to check out Enterprise in Space, a project of the nonprofit National Space Society. Visit enterpriseinspace.org to find out more and to get your seat on the mission. And check out audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your desktop or mobile device. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
If you'd like to contact us about this episode or any episode of To the Journey, head over to trek.fm/contact. While you're there, you can also leave us a voicemail. Look in the sidebar on our To the Journey show page, or go to speakpipe.com/trekfm. You can also find us on Twitter. Our handle is @trekfm. Or if you're on Facebook, We're at facebook.com/trekfm. While you're on Facebook, check out the Babel Conference, Trek FM's listeners-only discussion group. You can also find it on our website at trek.fm if you just click the discussion button on the menu bar. We also invite you to leave a rating and review of To the Journey on iTunes. We'd love to hear your feedback and suggestions for the show. So, Zachary, if someone wants to send you their recipe for pecan pie, where can they find you on the internet?
Well, you can find me elsewhere on the Trek FM network as co-host of Metatrex, Trek FM show on Star Trek and philosophy, along with my co-host there, Mike Morrison. You can find me in the Babel Conference if you want to talk about Star Trek with me there, and you can find me on Twitter. My handle is just my name, at Zachary Frueling. And how about you, Kay, when you're not composing music on your space theremin, where can people find you on the interwebs and around the Trek FM network?
Well, you can find me in the Babel Conference, and if you want to look me up on Twitter, my handle is ChocoWeeble. So, Suzanne, when you're not basking in the Erosene winds, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me occasionally on the Babel Conference, or you can find me on Twitter. My handle is at KJaneWay8. That's the letter K, Janeway, and the number 8.
So next week, we will be using logic to justify almost anything. But until then, this has been To the Journey.